I'm Andrew Riley, and this is Drupal Easy Podcast number 92, and we have a full house for the first time in about four episodes. So without much further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Mr. Michael Anillo. How's it going, Mike?
All right, Mr. Andrew Riley, how are you?
I'm doing quite good. I feel bad for our New York listeners, for those of you in the world that got hit by a hurricane. I'm just glad it wasn't Florida this time.
You know, we've been spared a lot lately. These hurricanes, we have like, Florida's had like Hurricane Kryptonite lately.
Oh, no. No, Kryptonite hurts Superman.
Well, yeah, it hurts hurricanes. It keeps hurricanes away.
Oh, I gotcha. Oh, okay, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Hurricane Garlic.
Hurricane Garlic, there you go.
That would be a good name for a hurricane. Start just like calling them like Hurricane Rosemary and Hurricane Tarragon.
Oh, so instead of like people's names, you're thinking spices.
Well, my dog's names are Porter and Waffles, so that tells you where my loyalties lie.
Well, depending on the name, you could get Basil and Rosemary. There are quite a few people names that correspond with various herbs.
Maybe they should have the name of the hurricane be based on the strength of the spice. So like a really, really, like a category 5 would be like Hurricane Habanero. You know?
I just say we open it up to the internet for voting.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Then we'll end up with like, out. You know, Hurricane Hello Kitty.
Oh no.
And you heard just speaking a minute ago is Mr. Ryan Price, who just got back from a spelunking expedition in southern New Zealand. How was it, Ryan?
Well, I wish that were true. It was awesome. I'm actually recording out of the closet in Urban Rethink today because the room where I normally record is occupied and somebody else is on a conference call.
Oh, well, I guess that's exciting as spelunking from New Zealand. So welcome.
Definitely.
Okay, and we also have a special guest with us this week, and that is Catherine Druckmann. How's it going, Catherine?
It's going pretty well.
Now, you are Linux Journal's, wow, I mispronounced Linux, Linux Journal's webmistress, and you're the resident Drupal nerd of Linux Journal?
That would be me, yeah.
Well, that's a pretty impressive title or set of credentials.
Well, thank you. I hope so.
Now, you were the guest editor for the recent Linux Journal Drupal special edition that came out. I think it was about a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago now.
It was a month ago, almost exactly, yeah.
Okay. Excellent. So you're going to be our top story, and I think Mike has prepared some special questions to grill you on your recent Drupal experiences.
Yeah, I think Catherine's going to have to share the top story highlight with the actual issue.
Okay, yeah, I think the issue is maybe a little bit more exciting than me.
So this is one of those things that came across the Drupal Planet feed. And I saw, you know, Linux Journal has a special Drupal issue. And I think is this the second time you've done this, Catherine?
This is the first time that we've done a special issue that was entirely devoted to Drupal. We've had Drupal stories in other issues that were just focused on web development in general. And
right.
We've had a couple cover stories. So.
Right. I'm actually thinking of you guys actually had Angie Webchick on the cover of Linux Journal at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I was thinking of. Yep. Yeah, so I saw this come across the Drupal Planet feed, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. In my head, I was assuming it was going to be 3 or 4 articles and, you know, in a PDF and be done with it. And I downloaded it and loaded it up into my little book reader here. And lo and behold, I was like blown away because it's, correct me if I'm wrong, it's like 160-something pages, correct?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And just a number of like story after story after story. So as I started getting into it, you know, I realized, well, we need to let more people know about this because I hadn't heard about it anywhere other than on Drupal Planet. So, I definitely wanted to, you know, let at least our listeners know, what a great resource this is.
Oh, cool. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Happy with it. Before
we dive into it though. So let's find out a little bit about you. And I was joking with you when we talked a week or so ago. I was joking with you and I said, you know, what makes you worthy of, you know, putting this together? So now I'm going to put you on the spot and say, so tell us a little bit about your background and your history with the community.
I joined Linux Journal in 2007. I was using Drupal before that, which is, you know, how I ended up at Linux Journal. So we're looking for a Drupal person. And I guess because we are a technology magazine that covers open source, and because I use Drupal, you know, for Linux Journal's website, you know, I try to get involved as much as I can. Because, you know, we try to cover the software as much as we use it. So we have kind of like two hats a little bit. I try to go to a lot of events and provide a little bit of coverage of the events, you know, and then also at the same time, you know, learn more Drupal skills so that I can bring them back to, you know, improve our operations here.
So are you a writer more than like a developer? I mean, is that
not, no. I do write, just so that's, you know, that's kind of who we are actually. So at Linux Journal, the people who write the stories that go into Linux Journal are primarily technical people that just happen to be writing articles. They're not necessarily primarily writers who write about technology.
So more of a programmer / journalist than a journalist / programmer.
Something like that. Yeah, sounds good. I like it.
So how long has, you mentioned a second ago that linuxjournal.com runs Drupal. How long has that been the case?
I believe it was 2005. And it was before I was around.
That's old school.
That's like Drupal 4.6, 4.7-ish, somewhere around there.
When I came on board, we were still using the 4.6 version. And I think that was the first Drupal version of the site. Before that, it was, oh gosh, I can't remember. It was another PHP framework.
Are you guys on Drupal 7 right now?
We are not, actually. We're still on Drupal 6. I'm working on the upgrade to 7 now. So
you got to stop putting out. you got to stop putting out these special editions of the magazine. Oh, give yourself more time.
Maybe we'll just write ahead to Drupal 8. Who knows?
So what inspired this special edition? Is it something that you had to pitch, or did
Yeah, it is actually. It's something that I wanted to do for a long time, actually. And it just sort of, you know, it took a while. I was pitching it internally because I'm a Drupal person. I like Drupal. I like community. It's definitely my favorite open source project. So it was something that I wanted to do personally. And I talked to a lot of people. Jam was one of them at DrupalCon about doing it. DrupalCon in Denver about doing something. And I thought, well, it's time. It's time. So that was pretty much it. I just sort of wore everybody down, and a lot of it is just fitting it into the production schedule. Mm-hmm. We have our work pretty much well defined a year in advance, like what we're going to do and when. So I just sort of had to sweet talk our art director and executive editor into fitting it in. But
I think, go ahead and finish. I'm sorry.
But that was it. It happened, and I'm happy about it.
So, I mean, do you have a good feel for, as far as the general readers of the magazine, is this something that they were asking for as well? Or do you have a good feel for how many subscribers are interested in Drupal, or, have been, whenever you guys publish Drupal-related articles, is there good feedback from those?
Absolutely. There definitely is. And, we have a pretty good section of our readership that is interested in Drupal. Now, that said, we put it together intending to make it appealing to our entire audience. So we try to not make it something that would only appeal to existing Drupal developers. We tried to make it a little bit more accessible than that. Mm-hmm. I hope we succeeded. I think, consistently, Drupal is consistently a really close second, I guess, to WordPress in reader feedback. So, which is something, I'm a little biased, but I would love for Drupal to be number one, but WordPress is incredibly popular. But that said, every time we pull our readers, they're generally a pretty good number of them that are Drupal fans. So.
I mean, the theme of the issue is clearly just distributions.
Yeah. So every issue we try to kind of focus on something so that there's a sort of a flavor to the issue, so to speak, not to use the word that I use on the cover, but but yeah, so it was something that I wanted to highlight to everybody, you know, so our readers are sort of the general open source community and Linux users. So I kind of felt like I wanted them to be aware that there's more to Drupal than just Drupal core.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the articles within the issue, I think three or four that showcase different distributions. I mean, I know you cover Red Hen, which is something I've been very interested in lately. There's a piece on Open Atrium. There's a piece on a distribution for universities, and it's not Open Scholar. It's the other one. Trek, TREKK.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know too much about until I read about it.
Yeah, they have some sort of an interesting thing going with their content scraping. I thought that was interesting in and of itself. So.
Yeah, they were working with Flatfish, I think is a project that is kind of within Trek that helps harvest content from flat files and into Drupal using simple HTML DOM and some other tools like that. There are also a couple of really, really good articles on actually creating a distribution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, step by step, including some code samples, things that I haven't really seen too many other places, either on Drupal.org or on blog posts. Are these articles that you actually had to go out and find people to write, or did you kind of are people come to you saying, "Hey, I'd like to write an article and have it appear"?
Both, actually, but yeah, a lot of them were responses to my call for articles, actually. So I posted a call for articles, and we got a lot of people pitching some really good ideas. So that's part of it. And then the other part is, yeah, we did, I tried to seek out some people who I thought would be pretty helpful. But yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the article about creating your own distribution, because that's something that I thought was pretty great for our particular readers, because they're people that are highly, I feel like, if we could just get any more, highly skilled programmers in the community is a good thing, right? So,
exactly.
Come over and help us build cool stuff was really kind of the goal, I think, behind it.
Well, you actually managed to sneak two articles in there about creating a distribution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was funny because I finished reading the issue yesterday. And as I was reading the second article about installation distributions, I'm like, I feel like this is the second, I actually had to go back and look at it and say, oh, there was another article, but it's kind of coming at it from a different direction. So for people interested in, virtually anything about installation profiles or distributions or make files or existing Drupal distributions, this issue really is just a great primer for all of that stuff.
I hope so. I think again, we tried to approach it, we tried to appeal to different skill levels. We tried to do stuff that would be helpful for people that are just getting started with Drupal. I mean, maybe they're used to some other platform, even another language. And then we also tried to get some stuff, in there that would be applicable to somebody at a little bit higher level. But we're trying to appeal to a broader audience.
Yeah, no, there's a couple articles in there that were definitely aimed more towards beginners.
Mm-hmm.
The one about the hook system and the one about creating an event content type and theming that event content type using Display Suite. As I was reading those, you could definitely tell that those were meant for people newer to Drupal, where there are a couple articles on the other end of the spectrum that didn't have to do with distributions but had to do with more advanced topics. Barry Jaspin had an article in there about continuous integration and how they do a lot of things at Acquia and how How would they do it? Acquia can be extended to, you know, any other platform. And there was also an article about caching in Drupal that, again, was just a really good primer for people who you know, may know a little bit about caching here and there with Drupal. But this article really said, okay, here are the different types of caches. Here is how it's pluggable. Here are the different ways to use the caches. And then here's kind of what you need to do on your site to kind of figure out what you need to do or which caches you should implement. It was a really, really nice introduction to caching that could definitely lead to doing stuff.
I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, if we can get, you know, a couple really awesome Linux journal readers out there that maybe weren't developing in Drupal before, if we can get them, you know, over, then we've done our job.
So, you know, in general, in the printed edition of Linux Journal, how often, you know, are there Drupal articles?
Well, that's an interesting question. We actually don't have a printed issue, version of Linux Journal. We haven't.
The standard version, I should say.
Version. Oh, okay. You mean the non-website version.
Yeah.
How often are there...
Should I call it a PDF version? I'm not sure. Just the non-Drupal special edition version.
We have an issue come out every month, just like we always have. And
right.
A little over a year ago, you know, we went digital only, so we only distribute through our apps. And we also distribute in ebook formats, EPUB and Mobi for, you know, your Kindle and your Milk or whatever you read it on, iPad. Yeah, anyway, so I'm thinking, oh gosh, we almost always, because I, you know, lobby for it, have a Drupal article, our web development issue. We have a web development focused issue every year. And then aside from that, there will be, you know, a few other, you know, opportunities for Drupal articles sprinkled in. But, you know, I would say maybe 2-3 times a year.
So how was the, have you gotten much feedback or reaction to this Drupal issue?
Yeah, we have, and you know, it's been positive. So yeah, I mean, it's something I'd like to do again. I'll do that. I would expect to see another one. Maybe, oh gosh,
so, 20. Let's just say 2013. You'd be safe.
Yes, that is a safe answer. You know, I enjoyed it, and it's something that I think is useful because it's not targeted at the Drupal community necessarily. I mean, it's something that I hope the Drupal community enjoys and embraces and finds useful, but it's also, I think, you know, targeted again at a broader audience so that, you know, it's has a little bit of the intention of bringing Drupal to you know, more people.
Well, and Catherine, can I say for anybody out there who has never read a magazine electronically, one of the huge things that it solves when you go to EPUB or to one of these other formats is that you can see the table of contents no matter where you are. I can't tell you how awesome that is, that I don't have to like flip to the front of the magazine, flip ahead about 7 pages because of all, in many print magazines, there's all those ads at the beginning. Like, you have to check this out, and particularly the Drupal edition, because as Mike has been spelling out, there's lots of great articles in here.
Well, thank you. I think that actually, because, you know, decision to go digital only. I mean, it was a very difficult decision, I have to be honest. It was very, very difficult, but it was just sort of it was what we had to do, you know, to survive, you know, basically. Paper is very expensive. So, you know, in order to keep going, we sort of, you know, we looked at our options, and at that point, tablet adoption was booming. And so, since we are a technology magazine, you know, so many of our readers are people who have every, you know, piece of technology imaginable. So we actually have gotten a ton of really positive feedback for our e-reader editions and for the app. So, I was really resistant at first, ironically. It's like, oh, I love the paper magazine, you know. But then I actually, you know, read it on a tablet. I read it on my phone. It's a lot easier, you know, to just tap around and I actually feel the same way, so I'm glad.
We can also check this out at linuxjournal.com for the various ways, as you mentioned, Catherine, like mobile, tablet, and all those different ways. So linuxjournal.com is the main way for people to be able to subscribe? Yeah. Is that right? Okay.
Linuxjournal.com, and it'll hopefully, not email me and tell me why it's not.
And we'll have a link in the show notes. Is the Drupal Special Edition is a free download. So we'll have a link in the show notes directly to that edition.
Excellent. And you can find those show notes at drupaleasy.com/podcast. I get a nickel every time I say that. Okay. Well, actually, Catherine, you're going to be staying on with us. So we'll get to hear more from you as we go on. But Mike, there's some big Drupaleasy news. I don't know if you heard it.
I may have been privy to this news. So we very happily graduated our Drupaleasy Career Starter Program class of 2012 last week. Actually, no, it was more than a week ago. It was about a week and a half ago. We had 20 students out of 202 applications, and we were able to graduate all 20 of them. So first of all, congratulations to them, because, you know, we put them through the ringer for the last 10 weeks or so. We're now kind of in that weird little shoulder area of things where all of the paperwork for the internships is being completed and stamped and processed and whatever else needs to happen. But out of those 20 students, four of them have already have jobs, so they will not be participating in the internship. 13 of them will be moving into internships in the next week or two. And once all the paperwork gets finished, we will actually be telling you more about that probably on the next podcast. There are some really, really interesting companies that are going to be hosting interns. I think it's safe to talk about maybe three of them right now. I can say that Drupaleasy is hosting one. I think, Andrew, you can probably say that Media Current will be hosting an intern.
That's correct.
And Ryan, where you are sitting right now, Urban Rethink, which is a co-working facility in Orlando, will be hosting an intern as well.
Yeah, I'm actually going to meet the intern for the first time in real life today.
Oh, fantastic.
All right. That's what I'm doing when this is done.
Oh, okay. Well, tell her I said hi, first of all.
Yes. I've also had the privilege of being a mentor for a different person during this process. And I have to say, there are some really great people in this program.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. It's. I've been saying a lot. I feel like I'm tinging. I'm like pinching myself every time I say that. So I gotta be careful there. Anyway, so congratulations to those 20. We will be looking to do this again in the very near future, just as soon as we get our ducks in a row and I have a chance to see my family in the evening. For a couple weeks.
odd concept.
Odd concept of being home for dinner, you know, with the family. That's kind of new. But there's a full-on blog post with some pictures and some information about the graduating class on drupaleasy.com, and the link will be in the show notes.
Excellent. So now it's time for our four stories. We choose a bunch of stories that are related to somehow to something with Drupal or something somewhat related to the tech community that, you know, we think is important for you to know about. So who wants to kick us off with the Drupal release cycle post?
I can start this one only because, you know, I don't want to go too deep into the post other than just kind of put it out there as far as see what you guys think.
Okay.
So the post was written by Bert Borland. I hope that's how you pronounce his last name. About Drupal, the length of time between Drupal releases, or the length of time of Drupal release cycles. And he has some interesting facts. He goes way back to the amount of time between major versions of Drupal and starts talking about, you know, between 6 and 7, how long does it take? Between 7 and 8, how long does it look like it's going to take? And the trend is basically that it's been slowly going up between releases.
Until a certain point.
Yes. I mean, so Drupal 6 was about 400 days. Between 5 and 6 was 400 days.
Yeah.
Between 6 and 7 was about almost 1,100 days. And Drupal 8 is looking to be a little bit less than that. But before that, I mean, we were looking at almost yearly releases. On average, a year or under, you know, between Drupal 1 and Drupal, let's say, 4.7. And granted, Drupal 4.1 through 4.7 were considered major versions.
Yeah.
So those were each about, if you look at Drupal 4 to Drupal 5, I mean, that was probably a good, I don't know, maybe 1,500 days. But each one of those was not a security fix and bug fixes. Those were actual big releases. And for anybody who was around from 4.6 to 4.7, that was kind of what launched the Drupal code base into the next level where we are now.
Yeah, there were definitely bigger releases. It's almost like when we went from like 4.7 to 5, that's what the point releases were almost like in the 4 days.
Exactly. So the gist of this article is it too long? Are these releases becoming too big where they're taking too much time in between major releases? And should we be focusing maybe on the release cycle time period and fitting what we can into that time period? I believe Barrett looks at it as far as, you know, iOS and Android and Mac OS X are on roughly year-long release cycles. You know, what would that mean for Drupal as well? I mean, could Drupal move to a year-long release cycle? And, you know, I think the short answer is yes, but we wouldn't be able to have, you know, 8 different initiatives going on.
Yeah, well, we definitely wouldn't be able to stuff as much in. But I kind of want to play the counter argument. Are we putting them out too fast right now with major changes?
The major changes are very major.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll answer your question, but I have another one after this. I think, especially from 5 to 6, lots changed, but lots didn't change.
Yeah.
But the stuff that changed, you know, it definitely breaks backwards compatibility, right? Like it's non-trivial to update a fair number of modules. And other ones are super easy, especially with like the automatic update tools. But 6 to 7, it was like paradigm shift. You know what I mean? And can we still do all the things we could do in Drupal 7 with Drupal 6? Yes. But there's all this new stuff. So, like, I think the trade-off is totally worth it from 6 to 7. I have yet to, you know, use Drupal 8, really. But from everything you hear, it's going to be, like, not just more flexible for site builders, but for everyone. And I think that we may have just hit the basically college years of Drupal, as it were. Like
Saved by the past, Bell.
Oh man, yeah. going to Hawaii. What are we doing? We've passed the high school phase where like we're kind of like trying to figure out like where we live in the world, and now we're at the point where we're really trying to like grow into an honest adult. And if that is the case, then we have the potential in the next 5 or 6 years to really innovate quickly. Because we will have kind of like become a working member of society, as you will.
But hasn't that been the promise for 1 or 2 versions of Drupal already? That we're going to rip the Band-Aid off and do all these things under the hood that's going to make it easier going forward? But it seems like every time we get to that point, we're like, oh, but we need to do these 3 other things under
the hood. We need new shiny.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at where Drupal 8 is going to be in a year, and compare that with, and I'm going to use 4.6 only because that's as far back as I have knowledge of. In reality, it's almost a completely different code base. Granted, you still have modules and you still have themes and you still have, you know, Bootstrap, but, you know, the menu system was completely redone from 6 to 7, or is that from 5 to 6? You know, Form API was completely redone in 4.7. You know, the whole underlying architecture of Drupal is being updated or changed right now between Drupal 7 and Drupal 8.
Yeah.
There have been so many huge, you know, kind of under the hood just rewrite that, you know, we keep on getting the, or having this promise saying, once we do this, we're going to be able to do things a lot faster. And, you know, for the most part, that's true, but are we ever going to be done? And, you know, the answer is no, we're never going to be done. But are we ever going to get to a point where we can start decreasing this this release cycle time period?
Well, one of the things that I've got to wonder is, could we also go with something like Canonical has with their long-term releases versus the, well, they don't call them unstable. I forget what they call the non-long-term ones. But one that basically has more support and a longer lifetime versus the new shiny ones.
Well, but I mean, that's bitten them in the butt recently too. And Catherine may know more about this working at Linux Journal. That their most recent long-term release, they kind of had to rush to get some features in that maybe weren't completely fully baked, at least this is what I understand. And it ended up causing some issues because they have a regular release cycle every 6 months, and they required, I think, every 2 years to come out with one of these long-term supports. Mm-hmm. So it causes a different kind of pressure to have to get stuff in, but also get stuff in that you might want people to use for the next 2 years or 5 years, technically, I guess. So I know that causes its own issues. I wonder if we released more often, wouldn't it be easier to upgrade? And if it were easier to upgrade, then you wouldn't have people, you know, call still on Drupal 5 in some cases.
You wouldn't have sites like Linux Journal and Drupal Easy still on Drupal 6.
Exactly. Yeah, the Drupal shop should be the first one to update, right? Because it should be, you know, clickety click click, and right. If you're not using like a really crazy theme, it should be pretty easy to do, and then start rebuilding your site. You know what I mean? Which right. Maybe you'll never do because you're just there. But
so in Baird's post, he has he actually says that he's in favor of a time box cycle of 6 months and supporting the current and three older versions. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, that's super aggressive.
Well, isn't that the kind of along the lines of what Firefox and or Chrome's doing?
Well, Firefox right now is on 6 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, they're scaled much quicker, but it's kind right. of, okay, these features are ready to go at this time. They're going in. Anything else that's not isn't. And then they have, you know, a stable, a beta, and a you're not going to be able to run this that often. Branch.
Yeah, and the other thing about something like Firefox is like they're working on stuff that won't be released for another 3 or 4 versions because their release cycle is so short. And for us, we Drupal 8 doesn't open until Drupal 7 is fully released. And I know there's a rule about this, but it's like and a certain number of point releases goes by or something like that, isn't it?
I don't know about the point release part, but
like it's not just like 8 opened when 7 was released, was it? Wasn't there like a little bit of buffer in
yeah,
there?
Yeah, there was definitely a delay. I remember when Dries yep. created the tag. Or the branch, I mean.
All right, well, I don't know how much more we want to, you know, debate or discuss this, but I just
I'm saying a faster release cycle may necessitate other changes in protocol.
Yeah, and I think the one thing we'll really lose with a faster release cycle is we get a pretty good marketing bump when we're only doing releases once every 2 years. Hmm. You know, people are excited about a new version of Drupal when it's once every 2 years. If we start doing them once every 6 months, people are going to be like, oh, another version of Drupal.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I would just love for us to get to a point where the APIs and all that stuff were so stable that it would actually kind of be a non-issue for those releases.
Yeah, for upgrades.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. That would be, you know, that's a very happy place if we can get there.
Yep. I concur. So our next story is about Open Atrium. I think all of us on this call have used Open Atrium at some point or another. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Open Atrium 1x is Drupal 6 based. Is that
correct?
Right?
Correct.
And so Phase 2 put out a story about moving forward in Open Atrium with 2.0.
If you ask me, this is very ambitious. If you actually read it, they basically want to stop Open Atrium from being, which I mean, I think this is kind of a trend in most Drupal distributions now, but Open Atrium, as it is a very early Drupal distribution, the components and the modules that are there, the features are very much, they work inside of Open Atrium and not really many other places.
Yeah, if you change something, it doesn't really work that well.
I mean, I've tried to use the case tracker module elsewhere, and I ended up just writing it with views and rules because it there's things that they did in their Open Atrium specific modules that like don't make it play nice with the rest of Drupal.
They're not Kit compliant is the problem.
Well, that's probably a big thing about it. But so like some of the modules that they started with as their core modules, or even to a certain extent the themes, like you have to do so much customization. You might, if you wanted Case Tracker from Open Atrium, you might as well have just used Open Atrium. And if you didn't want it, then you might as well have just built it the normal way. So it's like you kind of had to go A or B. There was no in between.
It's hard to get the chocolate out of the peanut butter.
Yeah. But the plan that they've laid out in this blog post is definitely to decouple all of those things, make them easier to use independently, and be able to turn on and off features, which I have to say, that was one of the coolest things I noticed, you know, in the early days with features was I could turn off, you know, discussions for this section of the site and it works seamlessly. It's really, you know, a nice system. And I have yet to work on many Drupal sites where I needed that kind of flexibility, but it's a huge feat of engineering. You think about, you know, what was this made years ago? So it was DrupalCon DC. So that was 3+ years ago.
2009.
Yeah.
Well, I'm interested because they announced that it's going to be on Drupal 7. And at this point, I just kind of assumed they would be going for Drupal 8.
Yeah.
That's a good point. But, you know, if you think about it, Drupal 8 realistically is probably still 8 months out.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're going to need a lot of modules up and running in order to start building this thing on 8. So I don't think it surprises me that much that they're going to build it on 7 first. I think the idea is if they build it right on 7, and they're talking about using Panoply as the base distribution and rewriting a good portion of, you know, Open Atrium so that it kind of fits on top of it. As Ryan said in kind of a better, more Drupal citizen-y way. Is that a word? Citizen-y? Maybe?
It is today.
Yeah, okay. It seems like if they do all that stuff right, then moving it to Drupal 8 will be, you know, kind of what we were talking about just a second ago with these releases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this will be the big, hairy, difficult move, but then hopefully going from 7 to 8 won't be nearly as difficult or hairy.
For the end user. For developers, it's going to be interesting.
Yes.
Catherine, are you an Open Atrium user?
Not a regular user, no. I mean, I've downloaded and played with it and stuff. I'm actually, the short answer is I think we're actually going to move some of our internal stuff to Open Atrium. But again, with, you know, would that be Open Atrium 1? Or would that be wait for it?
Can I ask you what you're using now?
We have a homegrown system for like managing articles and also the back end of the operations of the magazine. And I thought actually that Open Atrium would be a better solution. Actually, I'm not even the only one. I mean, Open Atrium in and of itself is incredibly popular within the Linux community. Aside from it being Drupal, it's you know, a lot of people are using it. So.
Well. The thing that always kills me about Open Atrium is I'm trying to convince people to stop using email for stuff, and it's so many organizations. There's lots of design debt around things that people expect to be able to do with email, and I'm like, but if you upload the document over there, you don't have to forward it to anyone, and if it's bigger than 2 megabytes, then I can actually download it because your email system stops it from coming to me, and you know all this kind of like. Yes.
And even more, you know, if someone new comes on the project, you don't need to, you know, basically find all the 37 emails that they need to read to get up to speed. You just kind of point them to the thread.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's definitely good for distributed communities too, where not a lot of people are in the same space, mm-hmm. because you get, you know, like I think people who use Drupal.org, we get that. You go on the issue queue, you read the comments, you download the patches, everything's there. That thread is the canonical source of everything.
Yeah.
But you still use like IRC and other sorts of, you know, real-time communications when you need it. And even if you don't, if you're in the same building, that's a conversation instead of a chat room. But I still want everything to live in one place. And yeah, the last is not my email.
The last thing I normally say in the conversation is, let's make sure we capture this in Open Atrium.
Yeah.
You know, if we're talking IRC or, you know, face-to-face or even via email. I mean, I think my clients probably, I think I make them crazy a little bit because they will email me a request and I will not respond via email. I will copy the request, put it into Open Atrium and respond there. And then send them a nice friendly message via email saying, hey, next time, you know, please put this into Open Atrium first.
Yeah, so, and Mike, all of my conversations with you end that way. No matter what we're talking about, we could be talking about football. And yeah. You tell me to put an Open Atrium.
I'm like, no, Andrew, the Cowboys do not suck. But if you still feel that way, put an Open Atrium. And in which case, as of today, I might agree with you that they do suck. But anyway. So Mike, yeah, look.
Do you ever find that getting people to use the Markdown syntax in Open Atrium is challenging? Or, you know, do they end up enjoying the fact that it gets turned into real bulleted lists instead of just like a text with asterisks in front of it?
You know, we covered this actually in the DCSP because we introduced Open Atrium and people were interested in it, and I wasn't going to cover it at first, but enough people saw and said, hey, what's Markdown? Where I dedicated about a half hour class one day to explaining it, and it took off. You know, a lot of our students ended up like really liking it and getting it.
I recently installed a wiki that I've been just using to keep track of some of my own personal stuff. And I started playing with Markdown and I noticed that if you download, there's a module for Drupal just called Markdown.
Yeah.
And that requires you to go get this PHP library, but that has like Markdown extras, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Extra Markdown stuff.
Like other stuff that you can do with the PHP version of Markdown that you can't do with the John Gruber Markdown. John Gruber, I think is an old school Perl hacker originally, and he does everything, I believe it's on movable type for his blog. And he writes all of his stuff in Markdown. It's this lightweight, you know, scripting language for doing markup. And for the longest time, the only way to do something in Markdown was like go to John Gruber's website and like paste your Markdown in there and he'd hand you back HTML. And then people started developing libraries for other programming languages. But now if you use Stack Exchange, which I really love the Drupal Stack Exchange website, lots of good information there. If you're a Reddit person, Reddit's been in the news a lot lately. What's another one that uses Markdown?
You know, Open Atrium was where I use it 95% of the time.
Right. So lots of like wiki style, you know, areas use Markdown or some flavor thereof. And so one of our stories here is actually about codinghorror.com. This is Jeff Atwood, I believe the guy's name is.
Yep, that's him.
He actually wrote a big blog post about a week or two ago about he notices all these different Markdowns and then the competing flavors of them out there. And he was trying to figure out how to unify them all, right?
Okay, make a mega Markdown?
Make one Markdown to rule them all.
Oh, impressive.
One thing that I thought was interesting about this, though, was the way he went about it. Instead of, like, as far as I know, I don't know a whole lot about this story. But, you know, one way that he could have gone about this is, like, send John Gruber an email, or assuming that he lives on the East Coast, like, you know, try to bump into him and bring it up with him at some point. What he instead ended up doing was going onto his very popular website and just writing a giant blog post about it. And I think 10 years ago, this would have been the most common way to do it. But lately, when we have, like, you know, this, most of the interaction that happens is on shorter form communication, like you've got Google Plus or Facebook or Twitter or whatever it happens to be, then you tend to just get like the headline and a link, and you're expecting somebody to reply to you maybe on Twitter instead of by like writing you a response blog post. And at one point in this, he says, you know, I love the New York Yankees, but if you don't reply, then we're going to call the new version of Markdown Yankees Suck. And going like, is this really the best way to engage the community?
Well, it's a polarizing way, that's for sure.
So was there, did he get a response?
Well, he did get a little bit of a response. but to me, it all sounded a little trolly. You know, it was kind of like, if you don't do what I'm asking you to, I'm going to badmouth some of your favorite stuff. It's just like, do you think that something like this would have happened inside the Drupal community? Like, would somebody have just gone out and in the old adage of, I guess, talk is silver, code is gold, right?
So I guess I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here. I don't know. Do we know how much he tried to get a hold of Gruber before this post? Like, is this one of those things where he's been posting patches and trying to get a hold of this guy for months and months with no response?
One thing that is interesting, though, is I don't know that there is, like, a canonical source of Markdown. And I think that might be one of the things he was trying to establish here is,
yeah,
we need to come up with a specification for what is Markdown and how do we test it so that, like, Markdown from this website will cleanly transfer to Markdown on another website. That it would be kind of like this universal interchange.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to... in the end, it's going to have a lot to do with, you know, not only the license of Markdown, but is it just, you know, John Gruber releasing code and slapping a license on it, an open source license on it? Or is there actual, you know, is Markdown in GitHub? You know, is it in a source code repository somewhere where there's a community that has a process for adding new things to Markdown? You know, if it's that type of thing already, and this gentleman has been, you know, trying to work within the confines of that and gotten absolutely zero response, I'm willing to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, only if, you know, this blog post is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, if you know what I mean, saying, hey, you know, can you please respond to some of these things? Otherwise, I'm going to ha-ha-ha, you know, start attacking things you love. You know, I mean, yeah. It sounds goofy, but
isn't that the story for the movie Seven?
Yeah, but not as dark as Seven.
What's in the box?
It's a, you know, it's a Yankees hat with the NY ripped off. So anyway. Hey, we've got some background noise, which tells me we have an interloper. We have an interloper. So, Ted, are you there?
I am here. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, Ted, you're playing the role of our roving reporter today.
Yeah.
You are live from Bad Camp, which is the Bay Area Drupal Camp. I think it's safe to say it's the largest non-DrupalCon event in the world that takes place on an annual basis.
Yeah, I guess it's also the world's largest free Drupal event.
That's true. Yeah, I think some like 1,300 people were there this past weekend, right?
So they had 1,600 signups, but, you know, it's a free event. So they don't really know how many people showed up, but a lot. It's definitely pretty full.
All right, so I know there's definitely two things we want to talk to you about. And we didn't talk to you beforehand about this, so we're hoping that you went to both sessions that we're about to talk about. Number one,
I went to one session the whole weekend. So.
Oh boy. Okay. Was it the Open Atrium BOF by any chance?
No, but I did talk to people who went there.
So what have you heard about Open Atrium for Drupal 7? Because we were just talking about that a few minutes ago.
Not really much. I could have, as we was in the next room, I could have asked him, but I didn't know that's where he asked me. It's a big change, is what I know, and that some people are happy with the change, and some people are not. And I think they're using apps,
right,
for in Drupal, the Drupal 7 version, Atrium 2.0. So the person, I talked to somebody who went to the buff who had concerns about the app model because it makes it more complicated, because they want these apps to be able to run outside Atrium. So they have to be a little heavier to, you know, to make sure that they don't just run within Atrium, but you could install them somewhere else. But, you know, if you like the apps approach, and, you know, then that will be a big positive change. And also, if you're not even thinking about using Atrium, you know, the fact that they're making these apps that you could use somewhere else would be a big positive.
Well, I think the apps are a bigger deal for the developers and for the end users, is what you're saying.
Well, for a site builder, it would be, potentially for the end user using it as a project management tool, they probably don't care. But for site builders, it would be big,
right,
whether using inside Atrium or outside of Atrium. Well, it's big because you couldn't use them if they weren't apps outside of Atrium.
Yeah, Ryan was mentioning that, where he actually at one point tried to, was it the case tracker, Ryan?
Case tracker, yeah.
Yeah, Ryan had tried to get the case tracker up and running on a non-Atrium site, but the dependencies were just, you know, crazy all over the place, where he just, in the end, he just threw his hands up and, you know, cried mercy. Well,
the big one in that was notifications. They basically have, like, customized code to send notifications from the case tracker, and it's... So there's all these little, like, individual details that, when you look at Open Atrium, it seems really well thought out, but it was a little more bespoke than that.
So when you were trying to do the app, was that the app, or you were just trying to do like the Drupal 6 version of a version tracker and put it in another site?
Yeah, the Drupal 6 version. So yeah, I mean, there, as far as I know, there's not apps out for this yet, but that's what they're working.
Well, I think they're building 2.0 with apps. So when it comes out, that's the model that will.
Yeah,
be.
That's the promise, right? You can have a little or all of Open Atrium, and you don't have to do it on a brand new site.
Yeah, that's the idea.
All right, so Ted.
Yeah.
I was gonna take a step back. So, tell us about Barcamp. Badcamp. You know, what have you seen? What's some of the highlights for you?
So I went to the Core Developer Summit on Friday, I guess, and that was really good. Sort of started off at the beginning, people just sort of saying where they're at with their initiative, but also they had time for people who have like a small thing that they're trying to work on and for come up and say what their issue is, ask for help. And then there was a lot of general discussion about, you know, how do we keep core development sustainable? That's a lot of what I've been doing. I've been to some sessions, a lot of good social events, I guess. You know, they had the trivia and the party. A couple of really big commits have happened in Drupal 8 here. So now translation is in core for Drupal 8, and that got committed out there. And I'm trying to think, I have some other ones that I sent you. Well, Views is in core now. Mm-hmm. That's been committed, but I think that was slightly before this weekend.
I think Twig made it in this weekend.
Yeah, Twig made it in this weekend, which is a templating engine, which is pretty big news.
So that basically is going to change the way a lot of theming is done in Drupal, correct?
Yeah, so you won't have PHP in your what is now TPL files, which I guess in the future will be like .twig.html, or maybe the other way around. It's a different syntax, and you don't. There is like conditional statements, but it's not PHP. But I guess the developer the themer community seems like they really got behind it. The front end developers, that they really wanted to get away from PHP the template system into Twig, because Twig is used other places, not just in Drupal. So it's something people may know coming in already.
So is this a rip the Band-Aid off type of moment for theming where have we like broken all of the Drupal 7 themes and made the upgrade path for themes a little bit harder?
Yes, I guess. I mean, it depends how PHP heavy your theme was.
Right.
So I'm not sure about like template.php, if that'll still be there. But if you have PHP inside your, well, obviously people have PHP like render statements inside their templates. So that will have to be changed. So I don't know if there's going to be any sort of like coder upgrade for template files like there is in the past for module files. That might be useful. Because potentially a lot of this is just rote replacing, you know, a PHP variable render with. It's a lot simpler syntax if you look at it. It's a lot cleaner. So
seems like there's a lot of opportunity not as as well for people new to core development to get involved because there's a lot of template files in Drupal core that need to be upgraded to this new templating system, correct?
Yeah, there's a lot of templates. And right, I think initially they were just working with Stark as a test, the Stark theme as a test case scenario to see if you could, they could convert it all to Twig. But I think now they'll need to be working on the other core themes to switch them over. So yeah, a lot of that kind of work will be, you know, sort of for somebody new or somebody who maybe has Twig experience, but not much Drupal experience. That could definitely be an inroad for core development for them.
So you're still there. Is the camp still going on?
Yeah, so there's two more days of core sprints and actually some other, I think actually there's an open atrium sprint today too. So we're, you know, a lot smaller group than the previous days, but today, I'm leaving tonight, but they also have sprints tomorrow, apparently without me. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Man, that's going to be tall order for them to continue without you.
Yeah, it'll be tough, but they'll soldier on.
All right, is there anything else that you think we should know about?
There were a lot of big summits before, like so Thursday and Friday. I wasn't involved in them, but they had a product summit, which is talking about distributions, but also in general, like different business models around Drupal and open source in general. And they had they had a lot of free trainings. And then they had a sort of business summit and an education summit. So it was pretty big. Thursday and Friday were actually pretty big days in addition. So those were all free trainings, and they all sold out. And but then Friday and Saturday were the sessions and bops and stuff.
I mean,
great event.
Looking at it from the outside, you know, every year it seems like it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and it seems like it's a like a second mini North American DrupalCon event, because a lot of the core maintainers are there. I know Dries and Angie were both there this week as well. Is that kind of the feel you get from being there?
Yeah, I think it's also the last. So Code Freeze, I mean Feature Freeze is the end of
first.
Yeah. So a lot of people came from Europe and all over North America, core developers, just sort of this is maybe their last chance to have everybody to be in the room together. Mm-hmm. So because a lot of these initiatives are sort of affecting one another, you know, like how do you store like the blocks layout initiative? It's obviously going to have to deal with configuration management is how do you store the stuff? So, you know, it's good to have those two initiative leads and people who are working on both issues together in one room because there's a lot of back and forth. So it was really big. There was a lot of talk about what does feature freeze mean as far as, you know, what is, you know, what can get in and, you know, what can you do after feature freeze? So very big event. Yeah. It feels
didn't
like
they define that and redefine that in Drupal 7 though.
In Drupal 7, there was even some exceptions, I guess, to feature freeze. I didn't know that, but people were talking about it here. But the feeling was you'd have to have a very good reason to have a feature freeze, and if you know exception, and I don't So yeah, I don't know. I think that's what they were talking about, and I'm not sure exactly if they decided, you know, what does that mean, future freeze.
All right, so
I recommend it if people can get out here next year.
So you want to hang around for the rest of the podcast?
Sure.
All right. Well, put yourself on, there's a little bit of background noise, so just put yourself on mute unless you're speaking, and then we'll
Sounds good.
We'll keep rolling. But thanks for the thanks for the report. We appreciate it.
Yeah. You guys can send me to DrupalCon Sydney. I'll do the same thing if you send me there.
Get right on it.
Okay. If anyone would like to sponsor that trip, please go to DrupalEasy.com and contact us.
Yeah. All right. I'll put myself on mute.
Speaking of those types of things, how about a message from our sponsor, webenable.com?
Yeah, so let's I have something really quick today. I actually we've had a request over the past, you know, since we started the DCSP. I know I feel like a broken record, but to keep bringing up the DCSP, but we've had a number of requests for people to take a look at our curriculum, which we haven't made available yet. So one of the things I decided to do was I created a couple of screencasts for our students, as well as I think a 13 or 14 page PDF that talks about how do you move a local site from your laptop to web-enabled using Git. And conversely, how do you start a site on web-enabled and then bring it down to your laptop using Git? So I actually went ahead and added that to our curriculum in the form of a couple of screencasts and a PDF document that takes beginner Git users step-by-step through the entire process. And we decided to basically release all that to the community. So right now on DrupalEasy.com, there's a blog post. It's titled Leveraging webenable.com's remote Git repositories for beginners. And it has all of our materials, all of the screencasts. We've gotten some really good feedback from not only our current students, but other students. Webenabled is featuring it as well. So it's for someone who's kind of new to pushing your site from server to server using Git. Our curriculum really shows you kind of how to do that step by step with a nice overview. So definitely check that out. And if it works for you, you know, sign up for a free or a paid account at webenable.com.
Excellent. Okay, now it's that time for all the hosts to tell you their picks of the week. It may be a module. It may be a theme. It could be another website. It could be a book about tea. We never know what we're going to get. It's kind of like a box of chocolate, someone once told me. But you can find all the links for our picks of the week at DrupalEasy.com/podcast. So, Mike, since you were just talking, why don't we start off with you?
Yes, because people couldn't possibly be tired of my voice yet. So, I actually found a module at the request of a client that I absolutely love, and it very quickly found its way into like my default make file that I use for any Drupal site I stand up. It's called the Term Case module. And what this module does is whenever you're using a tagging vocabulary where people are allowed to type in the tags, it makes the case of those tags consistent. Mm-hmm. You can either make them always uppercase, always lowercase, always first letter capitalized, the rest lowercase. But it makes them consistent. And the best part is if you already have 6,000 tags, it will retroactively go back and make them all lowercase or all uppercase for you. But it's just one of those dead simple modules so that if you have someone typing in the word Drupal as a tag and one person uses capital D and the other person uses lowercase d, without this module, they're two different tags. Mm-hmm. With this module, they're one tag. And it works perfectly, seamlessly. I haven't had an issue with it, and I love it.
Well, and this module also does something that I think that all module developers should do. It's got a screenshot.
Yep.
Very important.
Yep. It's amazing how a picture on it just makes it that much better, but it actually does.
And the developer, I should say, is Barris Wanschers.
You just want to show off saying Barris's name.
Barris is easy to say. It's his last name. It could be Wanschers, but I'm pretty sure SCH would be Schurz.
I'm going with well, you need to Transylvania it up a little bit. I think it would be Von Schurz.
Oh, Von Schurz. All right, I'll buy that.
We should have the people who we're talking about actually come in and vote how well we've done in the past.
No, I don't think we.
I'm automatically excluded.
We would not want that. No.
Okay, well, my pick of the week is actually something I just recently found out about. It's Google Refine, and it's kind of tagline is it helps you clean up or it helps you work with messy data. So we've covered multiple times on this podcast the Migrate module, and a lot of the time I have to use Migrate to get the data in, but I find myself writing a lot of PHP code or using Excel or something like that to kind of massage the data and clean it up. Well, this is actually a program that's made to help you do that in a relatively sane manner. It's actually a Java program, so I've been messing around with that, and it's been pretty fun to clean up, you know, sets of data that are a few gigs big.
Am I right, Andrew, that there's some of the information about this site is on GitHub and some of it's on Google code still?
Yeah, I find a lot of the old tickets and documentations and things like that are still in the Google site because they just recently... Okay, let me go back a little bit in history. Google purchased Refine from, I forget the company's name, I'm sorry, to the people who originally wrote it, but they purchased it and now it's becoming Open Refine, so it won't be Google tagged and it'll kind of be a more open source project, I'm supposing, or I'm guessing.
Okay. I see this word Freebase mentioned here a lot. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. Oh, well, not that Freebase.
Oh.
I'm assuming free as in freedom.
Okay, not the 80s.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, I haven't looked into any of the Freebase items yet, except that it can work natively with Freebase databases, but that's all I know so far.
Every time you say it, it gets worse.
All we need is Crocodile Dundee now to come on the podcast.
Why don't I understand that? I don't understand
now, half that's a module.
Yeah, just an 80s reference.
Okay. Oh, you had an extra one lying around. You wanted to throw it in?
Yeah. I've got a quota to keep here, folks.
I'm partial to Flight of the Navigator myself.
Oh, I just watched it the other night. Excellent movie.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, Ryan, how about you go with your pick of the week?
I have a double pick because these two modules, for me, I could not really take one without the other. One is called Inline Register, and it does pretty much exactly that. It allows someone who is not currently a registered user of your site to see the content creation page, but also display for them a form that lets them register while they're creating this content. In order to get this to be the exact experience that I was looking for, I also had to add a module called Email Register, or maybe it's Email Registration. Email Registration, they both ended with Asian, not er. So that you could basically put your email address in, put a password in, and then finish filling everything out. And then the website would email you a confirmation email, after which point then somebody could come back, approve your content, approve your account. But to make the act of signing up for the website and creating content all on one form. I did have to do a little bit of patching to get this to work. So if you're adverse to patching, then danger, here be dragons. But it actually was really pretty easy. There's all the patches were sitting in the issue queue for the respective modules, and it ended up being not the hardest thing I've ever done. So I was really glad that somebody had already done this work because I was looking for this kind of stuff.
So I wonder, how does that actually work when you're actually putting one Drupal form inside another Drupal form? How does that work where both
basically it happens on the submit hook? The inline registration module essentially hacks the node creation form to allow you to do things like log in or register while you're submitting the form. And so if you fail to fill out something on either form, which really they are just one form, if you fail to fill out something on either form or invalidate, it invalidates the whole thing and sends you back just like normal. It actually worked pretty well. Oh, but sweet. The thing that I found was because we were doing this to try and test out, it's a usability test, and you know we were videotaping people. It ended up being that people didn't expect to be able to register and create account or create content at the same time. So while I thought this was a really good idea, in practice it ended up being hard to understand for the users.
Well, that's interesting. Only because they didn't expect it to be that easy.
Their expectation was create an account, then you get to do something. So
not create an account and do something at the same time.
Yeah. So cool. That's going to take some more testing for that project, but I was happy that these modules were around.
Excellent. Well, next up we have Catherine. And Catherine, I peeked a little bit at your submission, and I'm just happy because I get to add a new category to the beginning of my Picks of the Week talk.
Awesome. Yeah, so, you know, I took the opportunity to plug my incredibly time-consuming hobby that is roller derby. I think the Gotham Girls have a pretty great site, and it happens to be a Drupal site, and I don't think it's any coincidence that they are the reigning champions, and they actually just won the championship yet again yesterday. So they're the 2012 Women's Flat Track Derby Association champions.
Woot in order?
I'm sorry?
Woot. Can we get a woot?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Very okay. Woot. But yeah, so, you know, I just wanted to share that Drupal is the platform of champions.
All right, so first of all, wait, hold on. We gotta stop for a second. Because, Catherine, when you and I spoke about a week ago, I'm a little bit upset with you right now. I asked you, tell me a little bit about yourself and, you know, for some background information on the podcast. And not once did the words roller derby come up in our conversation.
Because
that would have been our lead story, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, well, I will keep that in mind. I do play roller derby. Yeah, I don't play roller derby as well as the Gotham Girls, but I do play roller derby. Drupal is so frustrating at times that I have to go hit people. That's my best explanation. Put on skates and beat crap out of other women.
But what's the path that one takes to get on a roller derby team? Like, do you start out like just being a ruffian at a regular roller rink when you're a teenager? And someone spots you and says, wow.
So, I mean, some people do. There are a lot. I mean, there are many different paths, honestly. They're just like Drupal, just like, you know, joining the Drupal community. There are many paths. What? Some people, you know, are born on skates, have been skating their entire life, or speed skaters, or hockey players, or, you know, other athletes. And then you have people like me who haven't put on skates since I was 8 or something. And, you know, the birthday parties. And then in the 80s, by the way. I have your almost midlife crisis because I don't think I'm that old. But and then you think, this is probably pretty good exercise. This sounds kind of cool. And then you put some skates on again. And you go, well, skating's not as easy as I remember it from when I was 8. And then you kind of have to learn to skate. And then you have to learn to skate well enough to be able to hit people while you're skating. So, yeah. It's not all really about hitting, but, you know, there's a lot of hitting.
Well, doesn't it also depend on what position you're playing or what your role is of what skill set you need?
I mean, yes and no, but everybody has to hit. Whether you're a blocker or a jammer, you have to hit somebody. You're either trying to get in someone's way, move them out of your way, or, you know, in one way or the other. You know, if you're the jammer who is the scorer, you frequently need to hit a lot of people to get them out of your way. So block your way through. So, there's a misconception that it's a very violent sport. It's not any more violent than football or anything else. But
in the last paragraph, you said hit like 12 times.
Is it possible that, Andrew, you have some obscure roller derby knowledge as well?
I'm fascinated by roller derby, yes.
But you were just talking, like, I had no idea there were even positions.
Because you have the person that's going around and tries to get around as many times. You have people that are blocking for that person. You have the other team that's trying to stop you. It's a defined sport.
That's or it is. I highly recommend checking out some games online. You can watch the championship archives online, and there's some really, really good, entertaining sport going on there. I mean, the girls at the top level, they're serious. Actually, one of the girls on the Gotham Girls team was in the ESPN body issue. It's the, you know, where they all pose naked and are intimidating with their muscles.
Oh my goodness.
So we've had free basing and naked women on this Triple Easy podcast. So
I'm not sure what I'm more impressed by, the fact that Catherine plays roller derby or the fact that Andrew like knows nerdy details about roller derby.
Andrew is the font of all world knowledge. Didn't you know
I don't. I'm constantly surprised and impressed by it. Unbelievable.
Is Ted still there?
Yeah, he is. Remember, we put him on mute.
Yep.
That's I'm going to have Ted do a pick.
Yeah, he's got one. He's got a good one.
Oh, he's all... Okay, I haven't looked at the doc in like 2 minutes. So clearly, he's all over.
It's actually probably less exciting now, you know, after the roller derby. But I'll just put a plug. It has two roller derby teams for like a 30,000 person town, so we're pretty proud. So my pick of the week is the Core Office Hours website, and so put a link in the show notes. But so the basic idea is you would go there if you want to get involved with helping with Core. They have issues pre-picked out for you that you can filter by what your skill set is and what you want to do, and they'll hook you up with a mentor, and they have a so it's a really easy way to start getting involved with Core and to have some people there to help you out along the way. And they have IRs twice a week, which I think are on that website too. So if you know, and I think also they're sort of arranged so that they're flexible, and one's in the morning and one's sort of later at night, so it might be convenient for people in different time zones. So it's a great way if you want to get involved with Core.
Yeah, and Ted, I think you cut out just for a second there, but there are, I mean, we got most of it. I think the one part that we lost maybe was that there are office hours on IRC, which is really the absolute lowest barrier of entry way of getting involved with Core development, is you log into the IRC channel during the open office hours and you say, I want to help, here's my current skill level, can someone mentor me in what to do? And then you get like a real person on the other side of the IRC window helping you and kind of mentoring you through the process. It's wonderful.
Yeah. And they'll really start you from like zero. Like if you don't have a local dev environment on your laptop, they'll help you out with that. So it's if getting involved seems daunting, then, you know, and you pick up a lot of skills along the way besides just being involved with Core development.
Yep. All righty. Well, thank you, Ted. That was a fine pick, as always.
Yep. All right.
Okay, now you can go back to mute.
Put him in the corner.
Put him in the cone of silence.
I was just going to do a Pulp Fiction scene or line from the end of the movie, but based on our prior conversations, I'll keep it on the G level.
There you go.
Site of the week. Hey, we've got a site of the week. And you who are listening along in your car, jogging down the street, or even perhaps down at the local roller rink, you can actually submit a site of the week at tripleeasy.com/site of the week. Now, I don't have that in notes, so every week I have to guess that URL.
Okay, you're all about it, Andrew. Yeah. But I have to say, we did have a really great response. Last week I said we don't have a site of the week, but if you want to send us one, we got like three or four. So thank you to everybody who sent one in, and we will be getting to them if nobody else sends in a more awesome one.
And people keep sending them in. Okay, I know nothing about this one. I didn't even read the notes to this point. I stopped at 10.
All right, well, I actually talked to the submitter. So the website is whenwhowhere.com. So literally, when, who, where. No spaces, no dashes, .com. The elevator pitch is, for those of you familiar with doodle.com, it's a lot like doodle.com, but it adds the venue and location information as well. So now let me back up. For those of you who aren't familiar with Doodle.com, what when, who, where does is it allows a flexible number of people to vote on the time and location, time, date, and location of a potential meeting in the future. So what this website does is basically replaces the 38 emails that go back and forth between a group of people when deciding where to eat dinner on Friday night.
Uh-huh.
Where you just put up on who, where, I keep saying, in my head I say it wrong every time. Whenwhowhere.com.
What,
you go
why?
To that site. I don't know why. I mean, how? How do you get there? That should be on there as well, I think. But you put up the option, say, hey, let's meet Friday night at 8 p.m. at the pizza place. Or let's meet Friday night at 6:30 at the Mongolian barbecue place.
Mm.
Or let's meet Friday at 11:30 at this club just for drinks. And so you put up all the options, and then you send the link to your group of people, mm-hmm. and then they can vote on the options.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Does it choose a winner, or do you choose a winner?
Well, I think it just tallies up the votes.
Okay, so say like nine people want Mongolian buffet.
Well, you know, I don't understand why everybody doesn't want Mongolian buffet, first of all. So that should just be, as soon as there is a Mongolian buffet option,
it wins.
The poll should be closed, in my opinion. But anyway, yeah, no, it's just a way to kind of gather information quickly for a small group of people. I used to use Doodle.com all the time, especially for arranging online Skype meetings between people in different time zones. For some reason, it just seemed a lot easier that way. But I'm definitely going to try this out. And Dan says that the toughest part about building the site was allowing anonymous users the ability to create events, but also still have access to the event later on to edit it as anonymous as well. Or maybe not as anonymous. But anyway, and then it says another difficulty was to allow users to choose between having an event in a venue or, now I'm not even understanding what my notes say.
Maybe
here.
It's like if people just want to say like pizza
or at a specific street address, isn't it?
Yeah, at a specific place.
Right. Yeah. From going from a category of places to a specific place.
Awesome. I'm going to try that out.
So it's whenwhowhere.com.
And you even got it right.
I have to like stare at the URL every time I say it. I think if I put my hand over the URL and tried to say it, I would definitely say it wrong. Hmm. When, who, where.
So bookmark it so everyone can remember.
Yes. Or okay. Just click the link in the show notes.
Yep. And that's at triplezy.com/podcast. Okay, so you can find us at Drupal Easy on Twitter, and I'm Andrew M. Riley. Ryan, where's the best place that you can be found online?
Right now on Twitter, it's Liberator with the Web 2.0 spelling, but hopefully pretty soon here we'll be doing more stuff at Bringing Art and Technology Together, which is BATTSOUTH.com.
Awesome. That's, we'll put that link in the show notes so everyone can click on it. And Mike, where can we find you aside from the Mongolian buffet?
At Ultimike.
Well, that was quicker than I was expecting.
Well, it's a long podcast, so I'm just trying to, expedite things at this point.
Okay. You can find our sponsors at Web Enabled. And Catherine, where can we find you online?
I am Catherine D, most places.
On Twitter, excellent. And also LinuxJournal.com.
Yes,
I saw you have a variety of articles on there, so we can always find you there.
Yep.
Okay, now I'd also like to say thank you for coming on and giving us the most excellent information that you did at the beginning, as well as totally blowing Mike's mind with the roller derby information. And did you want to throw in your roller derby name?
Oh, I absolutely did, because it's nerdy. Yeah, you can also find me hitting people under the name of Cyberbully, and my number is Kill 9.
It's not a violent sport, people.
So for Mike, who may be less educated in this area, most people in roller derby tend to pick some sort of a pun-tastical name.
How do you know about that? Does everybody know about roller derby but me?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
probably. It is the fastest growing women's sport, I think. Or maybe we just tell everybody it is.
Okay, so Ryan, please tell me more about roller derby. and about people's nicknames.
Well, gosh, there's one, you know, like somebody might go by the name of Pain Jane because they want to inflict pain on the court. I've got one for you. How about that?
Okay. So it's kind of like the old XFL league where instead of like their actual names on the back, they got to put like silly nicknames on the back of their jerseys.
Right, but I mean, like, you've got, like, a guy who's an announcer standing there, like, you know, reading out all these names as they're going around the track.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. There are our alter egos.
All right.
Some of them are pretty interesting, but, yeah, we try to keep them a little mostly PG in our league, mostly.
Also, if you're a fan of tattoos and piercings, you would probably like going to a roller derby bout.
Although I think it's changing. We don't have a lot of that in our group. Like, I'm not that girl, but it's out there, yeah.
I mean, I think I may be playing to a stereotype, but there is some of that,
original,
for sure.
Yeah, it's not untrue. Yeah.
Okay. So next week on Roller Derby 101.
That's it. New podcast, spinoff podcast.
Oh, yeah. Drupal roller derby.
We don't have enough rock and roll music, I think.
I have one of Morton's stickers on my helmet.
Oh, very nice.
The DrupalCon on the back of my head.
Oh yeah, awesome. Ryan, you need to send up some patches. Or over some patches.
Okay, when I get the next version made, I will be sure. I'm actually completely out of them right now.
Also, we need to check if there's a roller derby groups.drupal.org group.
Oh, that would be good.
Okay, well, you can find all the show notes that you can click on the links or find out clarifications or even comment on it at DrupalEasy.com/podcast. You can also find us under Drupal Easy and iTunes, Miro, and we're now on Stitcher. That's the new one. So you can listen to us on the iPhone, Android, Kindle Fire, and a bunch of other devices. You can also see what we're looking at, kind of, at Drupal Easy Podcast, or excuse me, on Delicious with the keyword Drupal Easy Podcast. You can still apply for a Drupal Association Community Cultivation Grant. Check the show notes for that link. And also, don't forget about Aaron Winborn's Special Needs Trust. That link is also available. I would like to say a special thank you to Catherine Druckmann for coming on, along with the Linux Journal, for being our guest, and our roving reporter, Ted Bowman.